So it's a really great story of the fusion between the good news of the gospel, the value and ethic of justice, and a real defender of the worker.
And I think particularly also for the Salvation Army, and we, you know, we have, a heritage of, you know, working with, you know, the poorest of the poor.
Welcome to the Challenging Evil podcast, brought to you by the Salvation Army's Caring Magazine. Turn good thoughts into good actions. Go to caringmagazine.org. From the dusty pages of Carvoso Gauntlet's book, Social Evils the Army Has Challenged, emerges our Challenging Evil podcast. We believe that this collection of staggering real-life stories of transformation will fire up our imaginations and convictions to fight for a better world today. What can you look forward to in Challenging Evil? Stories of social and spiritual transformation from the front lines of radical justice. Prepare yourself to be amazed.
This is Chapter 3 of Challenging Evil, Dispatches from the Front Lines of Radical Justice. This originated with a 1954 publication called Social Evils, The Salvation Army Has Challenged by S. Carvoso Gauntlet. And here it is, Chapter 3, Sweated Labor. Now, this is a fascinating story, and it's kind of often popularly known as the Matchbox Campaign. This is a common story. If you're around, if you know, or if you've been part of the Salvation Army, you'll know the story. If you haven't been, you might not know the story. But one of the problems is that London was a manufacturer of matches. It was one of the major industries. And it was a large industry in London at the time. The problem is that the people that were employed to make the matches were from the poor. It was a very toxic manual job. And oftentimes it resulted in a thing called bossy job, which was a disease that a lot of matchmakers caught, which slowly ate away the jawbones of a person. And they died a very painful, what they called a living death. Even despite operations, they would lost their health in their operations. And it was terrible. It was called matchmaker's leprosy. And because the Salvation Army was working with the poor and among the poor, they constantly ran into these problems. And the reason it was happening is because the matches were being made with a poisonous phosphorus. Now, the thing is that they didn't have to be. They didn't have to be made with that phosphorus. So even though the match factories knew that this was the case and the way that they were making the matches, and they knew it didn't have to change, they weren't really very propelled to change it. They just kept saying, it's hard to change it, it's difficult to source, it's not the way we make matches. And so the Salvation Army just decided that, you know, this isn't going to work out for them. So it is good to know that there was already a movement in place. Trade unions and others had protested, various strikes had taken place. And a number of people, even the government, issued regulations that factories must provide some things, but it didn't really have any effect. We're going to have an interview with April Foster coming right up. And April Foster is heading up a North American connected to a global campaign the Salvation Army has started called Others Trade for Hope, which is talking about fair wage. It's talking about fair work. It's talking about viewing people, our global partners, because now we understand the way that industry works is in a global context. It's no longer just in the borders of countries alone. So now we're having a bigger conversation about how we make sure that the things that we buy in the other parts of the are not oppressing and keeping people diseased and impoverished and poor in other parts of the world. A very similar, if London was a little micro of this, now we're living in a macro globalized world. So we're going to talk a little bit about fair trade and the Army's current campaign called Others. Hang in with us. This is just getting exciting. This is the Matchbox Factory, the Sweated Labor chapter of Challenging Evil. We have Colonel Richard Munn with us.
To quote unquote, worry your local store owner. So a little bit of agitation. You know, we're only going to buy the Salvation Army's matches. Well, lo and behold, the rest of the industry picks up on this. They're beginning to lose money. It becomes a wave across England in the late 19th century, and people are buying this more and more and more. The industry self-regulates, and then coming right behind, government passes a law in 1897, and that mandates that matches can only be made by red phosphorus. The asterisk of the story, mission accomplished. 4 years later, 1901, William Booth closes down the factory. We changed the industry. People are working with safe raw materials. Legislation has been passed. Now we move on, expend our energy somewhere else. So it's a really great story of the fusion between the good news of the gospel, the value and ethic of justice, and a real defender of the worker. So, you know, Isaiah 58, Isaiah really laments over the exploitation of your workers. Psalm 82, defend the cause of the weak. And Booth takes that and does it in the East End of London, of all places, in a match factory.
Yeah, and it's, you know, there's so many things that are striking, like, you know, the Salvation Army, its history, its DNA is so bold that, you know, because, I mean, we could have spent our whole entire movement just, like, fighting for the right. You know, we could have just – but this amazing ability that Booth had to demonstrate, like, whenever people were like, oh, it'll never happen, it can't change – he's just like, okay, let's open a factory. Like, let's show, demonstrate, which I think is maybe one of the best examples of a demonstration of the gospel. Like, this is what it looks like, people. And then the sheer demonstration of it almost makes it possible. You know, like where it was impossible before, where match owners couldn't even convince themselves that it was worth it to change the conditions of the factory. And then here he is going, right. Not only is it worth it, it's going to be lucrative. It's going to be better for the poor. You can actually make a business work this way. You know, like there's just this demonstration piece is so big because it was so risky and, you know, it was a lot of money and it was the reputation of the army. You know, just the sheer ability of the army to risk it in those days for the people they were fighting for is remarkable to me.
Yeah, it shows entrepreneurial savvy, real venture of faith to somehow recruit and get the money. And it explodes the horizon of what you can do with the gospel, that it's so much more than just sitting in a circle and singing choruses and having pizza afterwards, that there's this wide horizon of stunning creativity that can flow out and really ingrain itself into the fabric of a community. Truly transformative.
And I think, too, for, you know, when I'm reading this story, I realized that the early days Salvation Army understood its, you know, its job was not just to care for the poor. It identified with the poor, and its job was to change their trajectory. Like, in the, it's a subtlety, you know, I think it's a real subtlety, but it's really, it's easy for the Salvation Army in modern day times to kind of slip into this, we care for the poor, rather than actually we need to change the conditions and the future of how things work.
Yeah. Right.
Some incredible implications, of course, with the globalization of the world and how the poor, especially, you know, those people that are literally suffering from terrible work conditions and dying to stitch together our clothes and to pick our cotton that makes the fabrics that make our clothes. You know, it's part, it seems like there's a lot of, you know, similarities to the story, just now it's globalized. And so it still remains, you know, it's still this.
I'm encouraged to know that there's a, not apples to apples here, not 100% identical, but the Sally Ann Project that has now become known as the Others Project. You know, here were women who were sexually trafficked. They were in the prostitution business. And the Salvation Army comes along and with local materials provides micro-enterprise seed money, and, you know, the prosperous West buys those products. But there's a little element of similar in terms of here's a local product, here's a skill, you can earn this money, you can experience dignity again. It's good to know at least there's a representation of that in our day and age.
Yeah, and in many ways, I mean, and for the listener, we're going to hear from April Foster next, and she runs the Others for America program, which is this Fair Trade Salvation Army initiative that kind of smells a lot like the Matchbox Factory. and or at least it's a beginning for that. And I think as we're retelling these stories and the shocking and the challenging parts of them, we're reminded that this might be the best time for the Salvation Army to adapt and try and experiment with sort of our own DNA, you know, like to really take some risks and to agitate society and to ask the questions and to change systems and structures and to demonstrate the possibility of a new way where people can't imagine it. Now might be a great time to really live out some of these things that are part of who we are. What do you think what's the most challenging thing for you after reading this story as a Salvation Army officer?
Well, I think you've described it. It's not acceptable, is it, to just look back and dwell in former glories. What's the contemporary application? Where are our entrepreneurs? Is our leadership structure sufficiently flexible to encourage, you know, the growth of micro enterprise or the actual embodiment of a Salvation Army presence in a difficult neighborhood or a difficult societal structure? And of course, it's not enough to say, what will the Salvation Army do? You know, what can I do? Where are my energies being invested? How can I think more creatively, more multi-dimensionally than I currently am?
This episode of Challenging Evil is brought to you by the Brave Campaign. Brave is a catalytic event for girls because 80% of American-born sex trafficking victims come from foster care. We believe that prevention is the way to combat human trafficking. Find out more about how you can get involved at sajustice.us.
So, April, thanks for joining us.
Welcome. Happy to be here.
Great. And I wonder if you just want to give some words of introduction, explain to us who you are, where you're located, and what you do.
Thank you. I am currently working as the director for Other Street for Hope in the Eastern Territory. I'm at the headquarters office in New York.
Now, can you catch us up on Sally Ann and then Others and Trade for Hope? Tell us how this works.
Yeah, very excited to do that. I mean, this is, you know, really has a long story in the Salvation Army, although more recently here in the United States. But Sally Ann began in the late 1990s in Bangladesh with the work of some Salvation Army officers who were serving there from Norway at the time, Colonels Brekke. And they were working alongside women, predominantly who were being trafficked and prostituted in Dhaka and other parts of Bangladesh, and, you know, really saw that there were not any other organizations coming alongside these women, and started in a very humble way of, you know, getting a small space where people from the Salvation Army just made themselves present. And available to women there in that context. And
now April, somebody told me that was in Bangladesh at the time that literally they had done this incredible rescue operation of getting like around 50 women out of prostitution.
Yeah, they had done that. I think then really seeing you know, the huge need that there was to continue to, you know, address that, and, you know, certainly in a very dangerous and threatening environment for themselves as well as for the women, but just felt really compelled to stay in that environment and see how they could make a difference in the lives of women that were there, and also for future generations of children and girls who were in that context.
This is what's interesting to me, because I had heard that those 50 women that were rescued, you know, one night kind of showed up at the Salvation Army and sat in the front door of the compound and said, now, what would you like us to do?
Yeah. And from there, I think it was really, you know, as we started off the conversation, not with a big plan ahead of time, but just seeing, you know, seeing the face and hearing the stories of women saying, you know, now I'm out of that situation. And now what happens? How do I move forward with my life? How do I support myself and my family? And from there, you know, the Salvation Army working with women certainly around issues of literacy and counseling and spiritual support, but also those practical skills that would allow them to make a living. And that really centered around handicraft work. And so some crafts started to be made and different items. And then I think the next step began to be seen that now that women have this skill, what are the markets that are available for them to sell the things that they're making? And, you know, certainly some market within the context that they were in, but, you know, looking to see how they could expand that to markets, you know, abroad, internationally. And from there, because of the connection with Norway, I think, you know, carrying products back and forth in suitcases and, you know, seeing how people responded to that, and one thing led to another, and eventually a store, retail storefront, first one was opened in Norway, and, you know, things started moving from
there. Now, that retail store, that's a high-end...
It was in downtown Oslo, right. You know, a beautiful part of the city, a lot of foot traffic and very visible, you know, for the Salvation Army. It had a small coffee shop attached to that store, and, you know, beautiful images of men and women from around the world who were making the products that were on sale. But it really provided not just an opportunity to buy beautiful things, but to share the stories and the transformation that was taking place when people made purchases of those products. And I think that has continued to be really something, a strong value of Others, Sally Ann, now Others Trade for Hope, to keep the story connected to people and the transformation that's happening in their lives.
Now, those original days kind of then transformed into a much wider network, both on the ground in developing countries and also in developed countries. Tell us about that.
You know, I think as the interest in that grew and, you know, discussions at different levels of Salvation Army leadership grew, other countries got involved, primarily at that, in those early days in the Scandinavian countries, Denmark, Sweden, Norway. You know, storefronts were opened, web shops were opened, you know, products were made available in different ways, and the range of products in Bangladesh increased, and the numbers of producers increased as well. And then there was an expansion to other countries. We're working directly now with men and women, predominantly women, in four countries, Bangladesh, Pakistan, Moldova, and Kenya. We have about 1,600 artisans who are involved in the production of products in each of those locations, and you know, over 2,000 products that are produced, and you know, designers working alongside those groups and looking at the skills that people have and the traditional crafts in each of those contexts and seeing how those can be developed into products that are of interest to people in other parts of the world.
That's interesting, eh? Because it always, I mean, there's some great ideas out there in the world, but it's the details that people get lost in. And sort of even just as you're talking about, you know, 1,600 people that are involved in these four locations in the world, sort of designing 2,000 items that could be ordered, that's a lot. You know, that's a lot. Tell me about what your best hopes are right now. What are your biggest challenges now in this venture?
Well, I think, you know, there were some very difficult days for Sally Ann. You know, as looking at the expensive retail space and employing people to work in them, and you know, the relatively small markets in some of the countries where Sally Ann started, in Norway and Scandinavia, and really looking at you know, how that could expand to other parts of the world. You know, people kind of heard about it but didn't know how to access products. It wasn't really easy to do, particularly here in the United States and in Canada. So a few years ago, a couple of things happened. There's a global council that kind of looks at Others Trade for Hope and looks at strategies for marketing and promoting this. And so the name Sally Ann was changed and rebranded to Others Trade for Hope. And the focus of really looking how to make this available to the Salvation Army as an entry kind of level partner. And we're a huge consumer around the globe, and particularly in this part of the world, of so many things that are being produced by the women in these countries, bags and purses and things for conferences and kettle aprons and, you know, so many things. And so it was really an opportunity, I think, for 2 years ago when I had the, you know, the opportunity to come back to the States to really see how we could open that up here and expand the engagement with this in terms of purchases, but also people understanding the story behind that.
Now to say that we're mass consumers is probably the understatement of the year.
Yes. Yes.
We're like the world's largest consumer.
I don't know any other bigger words to use.
Right. So that was funny. That was cute. Yeah. And, but also, I mean, the other thing is if people were to look in what it is that they're purchasing elsewhere, you'll see that it's off also made in Bangladesh and India and Moldova and Kenya. So it's a fascinating thing that we're really trying to redeem some of what we already practice.
That's right.
For the purposes of making a better world, right? So there's this full circle that there's a way of consuming that could be responsible consumption. So that has a possibility of changing the way we view the host countries or folks that are in developing worlds, where traditionally we've sort of painted this terrible, sad story and we need to, as white Western rich people, bail them out of their terrible lives, to actually this possibility of an investment in people's capacity where they actually hold a lot of value and trade and possibilities of growth and self-sustainability, and what they need is a partner rather than a rescuer. But also, I think the thing that it offers us is it offers us a bit of rescuing from our own patterns of trade and consumption in the West, mm-hmm. where we tend, especially in the Salvation Army, it seems to me that we are plagued with the idea of cheap being good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I don't know how many times, you know, and all of us have to balance budgets and all that kind of stuff, but we end up saying, you know, the cheaper the better, as though cheap is a virtue.
Yeah.
And we really haven't connected until recently the cost, the true cost of cheap goods mm-hmm. That are exploitative in the world. So this offers us a way of consuming, but in a way that will actually be contributing to the world rather than taking.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I think our stories become much more interconnected in a healthy way when we begin to relate to each other in these ways. And Others Trade for Hope, I think, is one wonderful opportunity that we have, you know, at our doorstep right now. I think this is the moment for the United States, North America, and Europe, and, you know, other parts of the Salvation Army world to really show that we believe what we say with our words by our actions. And, you know, Others is here now. It's available. It's in front of people. Stories are available. Products are available. And I believe that this is, you know, something that we're turning towards, and excited to see how that looks in the next few years.
Okay, April, talk me too. I think now is the time. Absolutely. Actually, we're way past due on this one, where we actually start dealing with each other in a right relationship. But hey, listen, so everyone who's hearing this is like, yes, yes, yes. Like, we're saying all the right things and all the right time. We know people's hearts are moved. We know there's a fair bit of awakened conscience around what we're buying and how it's affecting other people in the world. So how do people get this? Where do they go? What do they do? How do they engage in this Others Trade for Hope project?
Yeah, well, I think there's a website. So if people want to go out, you know, right now as they're listening to this podcast or right after and purchase something and see some of the stories of the producers, they can do that at usa.tradeforhope.com.
For more information on the fight for freedom, go to sajustice.us. To download original chapters and a new discussion guide, visit caringmagazine.org. Challenging Evil Podcast is created by S.A. Justice, hosted by Danielle Strickland, and engineered by Saul Sosa.